Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunner Blog. Goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you. Apologies for the delay in reaching you. I was caught up with, as you put it on Twitter, the lawnmower man himself.
The lawnmower man was literally mowing the lawn, which I guess is what you would expect a lawnmower man to do.
Yeah, if anything, he was fulfilling his kind of nominative obligations. I mean, you know, that's how he got the name, the lawnmower man, I guess, mowing lawns. If to deny him that would be wrong and cruel. That's his livelihood. He loves mowing the lawn.
Yeah, I mean, could you make him do other things? Would that just confuse him? Could you make him like mow a shag pile carpet? Would that be still in the same ballpark? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I'm at my mum's house at the moment, and she hasn't got carpet. She's got wooden floor, so it's the lawn or nothing for him, I'm afraid.
Right, okay. His options are fairly limited. We also should just point out that there are some connection issues, not between us personally, but internettingly. There are a few little connection issues, so sound quality might be a problem throughout this podcast. We have no idea. We're just winging it. We're going to see what happens. So apologies if there are some delays or little bits that cut out, but we'll try and bring you as good a podcast as we possibly can under the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, as I say, I'm staying with my mum this week, and it seems like she's diverted most of her funds into gardening, not into Wi-Fi. I can only apologise for that.
Yeah, well, some people have got their priorities all wrong, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Her podcast is rubbish. It's absolutely rubbish, the quality on her podcast.
Where is my monkey podcast? That's the podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, shall we talk about football? I think we should talk about football. I feel like I need to talk about football just to kind of take my mind off all the other things that are going on in the world right now. It's bad, which is why I think football would be good for people. We can talk about football, so let's talk about football. Arsenal play Brighton yesterday at the Emirates. Not the most exciting game I think we're ever going to witness at the Emirates Stadium, or indeed any other stadium, or possibly between Arsenal and Brighton, who may have more exciting fixtures than this between them. But, well, what can you do? Another clean sheet, another 3 points. We can't argue with that, can we?
No. I mean, maybe it would be more exciting if someone was mowing the lawn during the game. That would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
That would be good. It would add a pinball element to the thing that, you know, you think a shot is going in and all of a sudden the lawnmower man is going across the goal and deflects it away. That would be something. I always like, in rugby, and I think it happens in Gaelic football as well, is that when a player gets injured, they just carry on. And the guy's on the field getting treatment from the physio, and play carries on around him. Maybe football could do that as well to make games like this a bit more interesting. So someone goes down with an injury, play carries on, and if you get in the way, you get in the way. Like if you get in the way of, say, Kolasinac, then, you know, that's your tough shit.
Yeah, and also maybe players would be less inclined to stay down if there was an increased risk of them being run over by a lawnmower.
Yes, that's true. You wouldn't dive, you wouldn't roll around pretending if you thought there was the possibility that your limbs could be shredded by a lawnmower. What kind of a lawnmower are we talking about here? Like a push one, a Flymo, one of those cool tractor ones that you sit on and drive around like a bumper car?
I'm talking about one you drive, I think. Yeah, I think that would be the most interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the players would all take to just sort of skirting around the edges of the pitch, you know, trying to stay out of the way. I mean, it'd be like having 11 Theo Walcotts. but no, I love it. Thanks for all the goals in Belarus, Theo. We enjoyed those.
But I'm saying nothing. I'm just maintaining diplomatic silence here. Yeah, I mean, look, it would certainly have added something to yesterday, but probably as an idea, it's not really workable. So I think we should concentrate on what actually happened.
Fair enough.
So we had no Mesut Ozil because he was out injured. He's got a knee problem. We'd know Laurent Koscielny because he was out injured. He's got his Achilles is hanging off, as far as we know. He's got an ongoing chronic problem with his Achilles, and it's flared up, which I think it did. A while ago, maybe at the start, maybe not last season, the season before last, I remember missing a few games at the start because of this Achilles problem, and then they got it under control and he was able to play for most of the season. So fingers crossed, it's not too much of a problem for him to overcome. But Rob Holding came in at the back, and Alex Iwobi, returning from injury, came in as the man to replace Mesut Ozil. Perhaps a glimpse into the Arsenal future there, James.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, I thought that Iwobi did really well, and I was pleased for him because obviously he played against Chelsea and then picked up an untimely injury, an injury that I don't think was ever really commented on by the club. I don't think they were ever particularly clear about what it was or what happened to him. But he got back before the end of the international break, before the international break came around, sorry, got back in the team, and I thought it was a really good performance from him yesterday. And crucially, a goal and a bit of end product. You know, Arsene Wenger's called upon him to add that to his game, and maybe a sign that he's beginning to develop that, which is really what he needs to go to the next level.
Yeah, quite interesting that he said about Iwobi more or less the same that he said about Mesut Ozil. Remember, he spoke quite often about Mesut Ozil needing to add more goals. He wanted at least 10 goals a season from Ozil, and that's what he said about Iwobi as well. So he's setting him fairly high standards, but we'll come to his goal in a few minutes' time. But the game could have started with an absolute cracker, couldn't it, with Alexandre Lacazette? Actually, should we comment on the fact that we had three different flavours of Alex as our front three? I think that's the first time that's ever happened. We've had an Alex Iwobi, Alexandre Lacazette, Alexis Sanchez. So there's three different types of Alex.
Yes,
which is
that's
great.
True. That hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah.
Alex, Alex, and Alex. Well, there's no way we can possibly recall Mesut Ozil in that case. He would ruin the formula.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, it's good stuff for all Alexes out there, or Alexandras, or Alexanders, or, I mean, could we include Alec, you know, the Scottish variation with a C, or maybe a CK? Presume we could,
if we
really wanted to.
If there are any tasty Alex out there, I don't know. I'm not watching enough SPL these days.
No,
but
me neither.
It was a great strike from Lacazette. Really good hit. And I feel like he's been a bit unlucky. You know, you look at that. You look at the one he hit in the Community Shield that struck the post. You think of the disallowed goal against Stoke. You know, he could have a few more on his tally with a bit of good luck. I mean, he probably should have scored one later in the game. But this was a brilliant effort. And I guess kind of it always lifts the crowd, doesn't it, when something like that happens early on, because it was a weird atmosphere. It's too early. It's too early for a football match.
12 noon is a rubbish time. On a Sunday, certainly 12 noon is an absolutely terrible time. And I think we've got some questions a bit later on maybe about atmosphere and that kind of stuff. But just generally speaking, 12 o'clock on a Sunday is not when anybody is in their finest fettle, should we say, when it comes to being upbeat and ready to sing songs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of people, even if you're not suffering from a hangover on a Sunday morning, it still just feels like it's too early on a Sunday to play and for atmosphere to really get built.
For me on a Sunday, you know, basically by the time I'm actually properly up and about, I had to be at the game, and that's not an ideal situation. So, I don't really know why those really, really early ones come about. It's when they try to squeeze three games in, isn't it, on the Sunday, three televised games.
But yeah.
It did not help the atmosphere. And plenty of empty seats around as well. And I'm sure the kickoff time played into that.
Yeah, I mean, it is an ongoing issue, certainly for the club, the empty seats. And there are reasons why. You could look at Thursday night games. You can look at games at 12 noon on a Sunday. You know, just the way the fixtures have been arranged this season, there are many reasons for that. But there are other more fundamental reasons, which I think we've touched on in the past. But yeah, I mean, 12 o'clock on a Sunday... Yeah, I don't know what you can do about it other than just sort of turn up and win the game, which we did. So that could have woken people up, couldn't it? The Lacazette goal that could have got things off to a very bright start. But it wasn't long before we did go ahead. Nacho Monreal scoring his first Premier League goal since 2013, I think it was, when he scored against Swansea.
His first at the Emirates Stadium, I believe. And what a cracker it was. A beautiful goal.
I actually thought he took it down very well. And for a guy playing, finishing with his wrong foot, I thought it was a tidier goal than it looked. It looked very scuffed and what have you. But I think there was a bit more control to it than people think.
Maybe so. I meant more the kind of ricocheting that occurred in the penalty area just before. Bellerin had a go. Mustafi had a go. My favourite thing about this goal is the way Alexis Sanchez jumps out the way of Monreal's shot. I don't know if you've noticed that.
But no, I haven't.
As it goes along the ground. Oh, it's worth a look on the replay. Basically, Monreal hits it with his right foot and it's heading towards the goal, and there's two defenders and Alexis are all in the way, and he kind of just throws himself up in the air. I mean, it's almost like one of those Francis Coquelin blocks, you know, like the one he pulled out against Wayne Rooney a couple of years ago.
I'm going to watch it here maybe. Hang on one second now. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, he just chucks himself in the air.
All right, here it goes. We're going to, just watching this, the referee is telling the Brighton wall to move back. He was quite officious, wasn't he, the referee? And he made Xhaka.
I think Lacazette does really well to keep the ball in play from Xhaka's free kick.
Here it goes.
He gets to it on the byline. Back knocks post. It back across.
Comes back in. Mustafi shot blocked. Cleared off the line. Bellerin shot blocked. Monreal. Oh, I think. I'm going to wait and see the replay here, but it looks like Alexis is jumping out of the way, but is also creamed out of it by a couple of Brighton defenders. It looks like they've just taken the legs out from underneath him as he's getting out of the way. Wasn't there a famous, I think Monreal said to him, cheers, well done for getting out of the way. There was a Bentner goal, or Bentner stopped Cesc scoring, didn't he? One time he blocked it on the line. Here we go.
Yes. Trying to back flick it, he was, or something.
Yeah, I need to see a different... Lacazette keeps it in, for sure. Yeah, they were complaining some guy got booked. Ball rebounds in. Mustafi block. Hack off the line. Bellerin shot. Okay, here's the good replay. I think what happens, actually, is that as Monreal shoots... the guy bumps into Alexis, so he decides to make the most of the contact and jump out of the way. So I think there was an element of like, well, if this gets goes wide or something, maybe I might get a penalty. But yeah, it worked out well for everybody in the end. So
yeah. And the only surprise is, I guess, that he didn't try and get a touch on it, but there you go, he got a little bump in the back, so that explains it.
He could have had a goal, couldn't he? I think he should have had a goal, Alexis, when Lacazette was through. And I think when a striker's in that position, you understand that they're going to shoot if they're in good form and if they're that kind of focused on goals, singularly focused on goals. But I think we talked about decision-making before, didn't we, that maybe with better decision-making, we would be a more... efficient attacking team, that we would make more of the situations that we have. And I think in that situation, if Lacazette had just played the ball back inside, Alexis had a one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and I would have backed him to put that away.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised that Alexis didn't really lay into Lacazette after that moment. Maybe he likes him, I don't know. maybe they're getting on. Because normally, I mean, anybody who didn't pass to Alexis in that situation would hear a lot about it, but he was relatively calm about the whole thing. But yeah, that should have been 2-0, really. And also, Aaron Ramsey arguably should have scored, shouldn't he, after what was quite a good and effective counter-attack.
Yes, that was a really good break. It was one of those where we made pretty much the right decision as we moved the ball from back up towards their end. Yeah, he probably should have scored. I think some credit has to go to the goalkeeper as well, because it was a good save. Ramsey took the near post option, assuming that the goalkeeper was going to continue across his goal, and reading that the shot was going to go that way. But yeah, he made a good save with his feet. I mean, he should probably have scored, but I think it's not entirely a bad miss. I think we have to give some credit to the keeper there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're making it sound as if it was kind of one-way traffic, but that wasn't really the story of the first half, was it? I mean, it was a really weird game, because Brighton, despite not looking a particularly great team, were able to provide us with a few scares at the other end.
Yeah, I mean, the goal woke them up. I mean, it didn't set us on the course for a more ruthless performance, certainly. Yeah. You know, obviously they had to change the way they played, because they were sitting extremely deep. Their plan was to keep 10, 11 players behind the ball, stop us scoring. So as soon as we scored, they had to come out a bit and play, and they did. A very clever free kick. Maybe it was clever because we're just not very good at reading when a team is going to do something other than the obvious, right? Like, short corners to this day still tend to baffle us, right? We're, oh fuck, forgot they could do that. And this was slightly similar in that they didn't just take a shot on goal from the free kick. They moved the ball into a position where the guy had a better side of goal, and he was very unlucky not to score.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's because we're not natural defenders generally as a team. It's like everyone's so concentrated on the job they've been given that any kind of improvisation completely wigs us out, and we've got no idea how to deal with it. This was a really well worked free kick and a good strike. And I mean, look, unlucky for Brighton, lucky for us, and we're able to, you know, go in at half time ahead.
How do you feel about the way, obviously the results have been good since the Anfield game? Results have been good, and that's really should be our primary focus. I'm not trying to be negative in any way, but I'm just curious as to whether you feel like we've been riding our luck a little bit, because there have been moments in games that we've won where the complexion of that game could change radically by fingertips, by the width of a post, you know, and you'll take it, obviously, but I do wonder if we could be just perhaps riding our luck a little bit at times.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, I think some of the stats would bear that out, and it was a little bit true towards the end of last season. You know, even with this back three system, if you look at XG in terms of the numbers of chances we were actually conceding against us, maybe we were performing a little bit above expectations. I mean, the weird thing about this run is you'd say the game in which that wasn't necessarily the case. I mean, I'm talking anecdotally here, but the Chelsea match, you know, didn't feel like that game. It's been some of the, you know, inverted commas, easier fixtures that have been more like that. And maybe that's because the calibre of the opposition's a bit less, and they simply haven't always had the quality to capitalise on the chances that we've given them. So, yeah, we have been a bit lucky, I suppose, but maybe that's just because we've been up against some teams who aren't quite as ruthless as some others.
Okay, well, like I said, I'll take it. You know, I'm not complaining, but it just worries me slightly that, you know, games where we've gone behind against teams like this who have come to play like this, and I'm not talking that, you know, obviously we scored first, but maybe the West Brom game was a better example of that, where we could have been a goal down if the referee had played on or not played on and given them a penalty. Against a team like West Brom, having gone behind, we've seen games where we've bombarded the opposition and just haven't been able to make a breakthrough, and we know how frustrating those kind of performances can be. But look, no point dwelling on what didn't happen, but I'm just a little bit worried that maybe that look won't extend as long as we might like. Second half, we were a lot better, I think, from an attacking point of view. Alexis Sanchez really seemed to come to life.
Yeah, he did. He looked like a man on a mission in the second half. I mean, you know, he clearly wanted a goal, and he was very, very unfortunate to not get it with one particular effort. But every time he got the ball, he was running at people. He was buzzing all over the place. It was a good performance from him in the second half, and obviously capped by a brilliant assist. And to be fair, it wasn't just his assist that made that goal so good. I liked all the passing play and the build-up. There was a pace about the way we moved the ball that was really encouraging to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were a couple of moments, actually, where we put those slick passing moves together around their box and it opened them up. There was one in the first half for Iwobi as well. And you can see maybe, you know, just that there is a bit more confidence growing in the team, the ability to pick those kind of passes. And when we do put it together, those one-touch moves are very, very difficult to defend. And it makes it, not that it makes it easy to open up a team like Brighton, but that's kind of what you need when you're playing a team who are sitting deep, who are going to pack their own penalty area, the ability to complete those passing moves. But I didn't realize when watching it on TV, because Brighton had just had a shot on goal. We allowed some guy the chance to take a shot from maybe 25 yards out. We didn't really close him down particularly well. It was a routine save for Cech. But I didn't quite realize how good that passing move was, from Cech into the back three, into midfield, Ramsey, Lacazette, Alexis all involved, Iwobi involved, and the back heel from Alexis. You know, those are the moments, for all the things that he does that might frustrate you, those are the moments that can prove really important in a game. They gave us the cushion that we needed. They made the game more or less safe. Obviously, it wasn't over and done at 2-0, but you're much happier with a two-goal cushion than just hanging on for one goal, because just one moment can prove really costly.
Yeah, that's it. And I think Alexis, even in this early part of the season, has, you know, been absolutely instrumental already. I mean, you know, you think back to his first game against Cologne, the brilliant goal he scored in that match. West Brom, you know, it's his set piece that created Lacazette's opener. And I just think he's been involved in key moments, even when he hasn't necessarily been up to speed. And I thought this second half performance was probably the first time this season that I've really thought, okay, here we go. This is the Alexis I was seeing last year. I thought he was at that level, actually, and might have ended up with the goal himself. Certainly created a brilliant assist. And he's a conundrum. He's a conundrum, but there's a reason that Arsene Wenger said all summer that he wanted to keep him. And we saw that in that touch. It was to the imagination to conceive it and the technique to pull it off. And I was really pleased with Alex Iwobi's finish as well. A bit like his Emirates Cup finish. It was unusually emphatic for him.
Yeah, he tends to try and place his shots, doesn't he? I think that's what he's trying to do. Not necessarily hit them softly, but I think he's trying to place them, to sort of pass them into the net the way that Thierry Henry did, you know, using the inside of your foot and curling them beyond the keeper. And I think sometimes there is a need to just have a bit more welly behind it. And he certainly did that with the finish. The finish was first class. And I think the goal, you know, one of the best goals we've scored this season so far. Arsene Wenger then brought on, well, not just then, but not long afterwards, brought on Olivier Giroud and Theo Walcott, I guess, to add a bit of freshness to the attack. But it seemed to do the opposite in some ways, that we didn't really look as threatening with those two guys on the field. And when you consider the amount of goals that they scored, you know, between them in midweek in Borisov, that was a bit surprising, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it disrupted our style of play. It disrupted our momentum. I also think that the second goal kind of took a lot of the air out of the game. You know, I felt like at that point Brighton kind of knew the game was up, and I thought Arsenal kind of took their foot off the pedal collectively. I wouldn't lay it all at the feet of those two players.
No, but
I know what you mean. It's a funny one with Giroud, isn't it? Because last season, he was absolutely brilliant coming off the bench, and he made a huge contribution on the opening day against Leicester. But I have kind of sensed in the past few weeks that when he has come on, maybe because the team have adapted a little bit more to playing with a different kind of striker in Lacazette, that we haven't quite been able to make it work, and it has generally seemed to kind of slightly throw a bit of a spanner in the works when he's come off the bench. I don't know if you've noticed the same thing, but it just has seemed to slightly slow our momentum in games, and that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on going forward, especially once Danny Welbeck comes back from injury. You know, how will Arsene Wenger juggle those attacking options? Because Giroud is such a different type of striker to Lacazette. It almost seems to be, I don't know, having a bit of a negative impact when he comes on, which it seems odd given how good he was at that a year ago.
I think what it is maybe is he's very much a penalty box striker. We need to get the ball into the box for him to be effective. And it works perhaps if we're, as we were talking about earlier, trying to bombard a defence. But when we're just comfortable and passing the ball around, he's not necessarily the guy who's going to get involved in all the slick passing moves, dropping deep into midfield and picking the ball up. It requires people to get left and right and to put crosses in for him to be really effective. And people working off him can be effective too. Certainly if Giroud is, even if he's not the one who's going to score the goal, he might get a knockdown, he might lay it off for somebody. Just causing general chaos in the box might open up an opportunity for somebody, but maybe we're just not playing to his strengths as and when he comes on. We're just playing in the same way that we play as we do with Lacazette, who's obviously a different kind of player, much more mobile.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think basically, the balance of the team doesn't seem to be right to bring the best out of Giroud. I know there was a lot of discussion around the game, and I didn't see it, but Michael Owen on Punditry was talking about Lacazette coming off regularly at that kind of 70-minute mark. We've got a couple of questions about that, so maybe we'll cut back to that in the second part.
Exactly. I think we should move away from pretty much anything that Michael Owen says. Michael Owen and Robbie Savage yesterday in studio. It was like,
wow,
Dumb and Dumber. Honestly, I swear to God, it was just, it was bad. You know who I quite enjoyed the other night? I know he was a bit, not everybody did, but I quite enjoyed John Hartson during the Borisov game. He wasn't always saying the greatest things, but he seemed to be really enthused by the things that he was saying. I kind of enjoyed that to an extent, but maybe
he
it's
had
just
a lot of enthusiasm for it.
Yeah.
Certainly, I enjoyed. Speaking of pundits, did you see Kevin Campbell? I think it was on the Everton game the other day.
Yeah, Kevin Campbell wearing the suit and the bow tie and everything.
Yeah, he looked extraordinary.
It was fucking great, wasn't it? I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, fair play. The man's got a sense of style, and he's not going to dumb it down just because he's on television. He's not just going to wear the blue shirt and the slacks. He's going the whole hog. He's got the suit, the shirt, the bow tie. I mean, he should come on with some kind of a hat or shades next time. I was very, very impressed. I think there should be more of that.
I didn't watch the whole coverage, but I envisaged that it started with Kevin Campbell with the top hat and cane performing like a big song and dance routine. Welcome to the Europa League or something like that.
But didn't I could be wrong here, but didn't Kevin Campbell have like a record label or something like that?
Maybe.
Okay, yeah, hang on. I'm just going to... Holy shit, get this, right? Kevin Campbell ran his own record label, Too Wicked, with the label's first signing being rapper Mark Morrison, who released the hit tune Return of the Mech.
No way.
That's awesome. Return of the Mech, wow.
I knew that one time, and it was just one time, Arsenal striker Andrew Cole had released a single at some point. Do you remember like a terrible single
Andy
Cole had?
Oh my God.
I've forgotten that, but I did not know that Kevin Campbell had his own label and was responsible for Return of the Mech. This is huge news.
Okay, actually, Andy Cole had a song called Outstanding.
Yes, that's it.
This is a bit of it. Hang on.
It's not very
Andy
good.
Cole, Piper, the MC, represent the mic and we rock the party.
Andy Cole is in his car here now, driving along.
He's outstanding at driving.
Now that woman is singing. Still in his car.
so far he hasn't done much except be in the car.
No, he's driving. He's very happy. It's a nice car, in fairness. He's driving along. Hang on, maybe here's a bit of Andy. Hang on. Oh.
Tell the world my name, who's that Andy Cole? I blaze the scene, score the goals. Keep my eyes on the prize, my inspiration. To celebrate life, to rock the nation.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, look, I think we can do without that in our lives. We gave it a chance.
If only Andy Cole and Kevin Campbell had teamed up. Imagine.
Well, it's no Return of the Mac, I can tell you that. That's for sure. No. So look, you know, all in all, a good day. That's 4 clean sheets in a row now in the Premier League. We haven't conceded a goal since Anfield. You could talk about the quality of the opposition, but one of those teams was Chelsea, of course. We've won every game since Anfield, apart from that Chelsea game. So we've won 6 out of 7 in all competitions. And while that would be expected, it's still slowly, steadily moving in the right direction, right?
We've steadied the ship. That's what we've done. You know, if you think about the last international break, it was pretty miserable, really, all in all.
Yeah.
And you have to give some credit to the manager and the team. They have stabilised significantly since then. If you told me at that point that 7 games in, we'd be level on points with Chelsea and above Liverpool, I don't think I would have believed you. So
yeah,
in the circumstances, it's about as good as it can be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got to take those positives. I know it's not been perhaps the most thrilling or enthralling, and that's down to the opposition as well. Games against Brighton and West Brom, these should be, generally speaking, you know, they're not going to be the most exciting games of the season. I do feel like, I think Arsene Wenger said it. Oh my God! That scared the fucking shit out of me.
Sorry. You'll have to leave that in.
Oh, my God.
They were very excited.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. That's Daisy and Blossom.
Daisy and Blossom. Okay.
But, yeah, don't worry. They've calmed down now, I believe.
That's good.
They were very excited about Arsenal's run of 6 wins in 7 games.
I think it was the West Brom game that really excited them. You know, you know how exciting it is to play against Tony Pulis. But look, you know, we've done what we needed to do, I think it's fair to say, in terms of getting ourselves back on track, steadying the ship and everything else. Anything else from the weekend stick out for you before we go into part two?
No, I mean, every week I just say how scared I am of both Manchester clubs and how I think that it's really upsetting me how well they're doing.
Well, I don't think we know really do we know about United yet? I mean, I think we can look at City and the way that they played against Chelsea and think, uh-oh. But Manchester United haven't really played anybody of any real significance yet.
No, I guess not. But, you know, the momentum there. We'll find out in October. They play Liverpool and Spurs in October, so we'll have a better idea about them, maybe. Mm. But you know what Jose Mourinho's like. I mean, once he gets on a roll, it can be absolutely maddening.
Ronald Koeman under a bit of pressure, actually, because Everton were beaten again. They've dropped more points. They're a team that we face. He's a manager with a very good record against us. He's tended to frustrate Arsene Wenger, and it has happened down the years. I can remember Champions League games when he was in charge of, he was in charge of a Portuguese club as well, wasn't he? Maybe he was in charge of Ajax as well when we played them, and against Everton he beat us last season at Goodison Park. But I, you know, I have to say, I would love it if we went there and we became the final straw. If we were the straw that broke Ronald Koeman's Everton's camel's back. If that makes any sense, I'd love that.
The nail in the Koeman coffin.
Of the camel in his back.
Big camel-shaped coffin. full of, yeah. I think I lost my train of thought there. You probably could tell. I started something that I couldn't finish. It was going to get dark, especially for people who like camels. But I think, well, look, they're not going to sack him before that game, are they? Because he's got such a good record against Arsenal. You've got to keep him around, surely.
Mm.
We've got 3 away games in a row after the international break. We've got Watford, then Red Star, then Everton. And it's Thursday, Sunday with Red Star and Everton. So you guess that will be a similar kind of rotation policy that we saw this week, you know, action when we get back.
Yeah, and there's also, I think, after the Everton game on Tuesday we play in the Carabao Cup as well. So, you know, a lot of fixtures being squeezed in. But anyway, we'll see. Let's keep fingers crossed that we can do what we need to do away from home as well. The fact that we've been at home, I think, has been a little bit of an advantage this week in terms of West Brom and Brighton, but we've done what we needed to do. So unless there's anything else, we'll take a break and come back with questions and more in part two. Anything?
No. See you in part two.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArsBlog. So, here we are. We're into part two. Do you want to go first or will I go first?
I'll go first. I'll take the reins.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah. I like it. It's decisive. Shows you've got moxie.
Thank you very much. Too much moxie, if anything. This question is from Jane Cavendish, who's at jcav90. She asks, on a scale from exciting / beautiful at one end to boring / functional at the other, what sort of football does this season's team play?
A little from column A, a little from column B, I think. We saw yesterday that there were moments where the interchanges, the speed of thought, the slick passing, the one-touch passing really worked. And it's exciting when that happens because it's difficult to do. But we also saw a team that perhaps is lacking a little bit of confidence, still rebuilding itself after the defeat at Anfield, which I think was a difficult one to deal with from a psychological point of view. You know, when you go out and you get battered 4-0 against a team, as we've seen in recent weeks, a team like Liverpool that are just, they're not as good as we made them look, that's for sure. They're defensively suspect. You know, we could have caused them problems with the players that we had on the pitch. It was interesting, Arsene Wenger talking about special circumstances of the Liverpool defeat yesterday. He's mentioned it a few times and he mentioned it again. You know, I'm not sure I buy into that. I think it was just badly managed situations by him and by the club, which played a part, but also the players on the day really didn't do themselves justice. But I think we're seeing perhaps a team that is capable of playing the exciting attacking football that we all associate with Arsene Wenger, but perhaps not capable of doing it consistently. I was a little bit disappointed yesterday that we didn't score more goals. You know, you think about the way Manchester United have been playing this season and maybe what they would have done against a team like Brighton yesterday. You know, they would have probably racked up three or four. But, you know, it is about getting...
It tends to be four.
Tends to be four. You know, that's right. And, yeah, there are reasons. I think we know that decision-making isn't always great, that we're not always as forward-thinking as we should be. There is a tendency, perhaps, to play safe, but maybe that is also tied in with the lack of confidence in the side, that maybe once we start getting results and clean sheets under our belt, it might liberate us a bit more from an attacking point of view. So, you know, I think there's been a need to be cautious and a need to be sensible in terms of some of the football we've played in the last number of weeks, but maybe now that we've got this run of wins under our belt, that the team will feel a bit more able to express themselves.
Yeah, I think we've basically been in a period of recovery, haven't we, from that Liverpool game? The results have been good, but we're not playing with complete freedom. You know, we're not playing. Arsene would say the handbrake's on a little bit. And we've not quite cut loose. Maybe it takes a big scoreline. Like, maybe we need to hammer someone, really, to kind of let the shackles off. It would be great to see. I would really love us to put a side to the sword, score four or five goals. It feels like we don't do that all too often these days. And another element in which I guess we've not been that entertaining, we've spoken about Arsenal playing on the counter-attack, but that was part of what made us such good fun to watch in the early period of last season, was that we could cut through teams on the break with two or three passes. You know, Alexis and Ozil and racing up the field. Theo Walcott in that early part of the season was on fire. We haven't quite played in that way or managed to pull that off yet. And I think if we can do, it'll make us a more kind of, you know, visceral team to watch rather than a kind of patient, attractive one.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, there have been moments this season where we could have made more of counterattacks, where we could have scored more goals if the right decision had been made on a counterattack or if the right pass had been made during a counterattack, you know? So it's not like those moments haven't been there, but, you know, maybe as with the bits where we're riding our luck, you know, this is something we have to see out. And when we start making those decisions and start making those passes, the team will... The team will be a bit more Arsenal-like, if that makes sense. So, you know, baby steps, I think, following Anfield and green shoots of recovery and everything else. So maybe over the next few weeks, we might get a better idea of what this team is capable of on a more consistent basis. So we might revisit that.
Yeah, at the moment, I've not been finding it, like, thrilling to watch. It's not been the easiest ever on the eye, but... that's kind of not been my priority.
Yeah, it is, or it has been just about getting the results, because we needed to get points on the board. Having lost two in a row, you know, losing to Stoke, I think is not that we've forgotten about it, but when they mentioned it yesterday on telly, I was like, oh yeah, we fucking lost to Stoke as well. Because the Anfield defeat almost overshadowed everything because of the manner of it and how difficult that was to watch. You almost made you forget about Stoke until they reminded me. So, you know, there was a real need to get those points on the board, and we've done that, so fair play. You know, we did what we had to do at Chelsea, which was not lose and show we could dig in a big away game. We did that. And as for the rest, you know, we've seen off the so-called, you know, lesser opposition at home, you know, Bournemouth, Brighton, West Brom. We've done what we needed to do there, and the points are on the board. And you look at the table, like you say, we're level with Chelsea and ahead of Liverpool. So from that point of view, it's going in the right direction. Anyway, going back to something we talked about earlier, Gunnar Nair, who is at Nair the Gunnar, says, what is the deal with Lacazette continuously getting subbed off at 60 minutes? It's got to be hurting his confidence, surely.
Well, for a start, it's not quite 60 usually, is it? I mean, we know Arsene Wenger, he makes his subs on 67. Everyone knows that.
Or 71.
Or 71 or 73. I don't think there's anything particularly sinister to it. I think it's about Lacazette adapting to English football. I think that it's quite normal for Arsene Wenger to do this with a player who's still acclimatising to the team, the club, the country. We all want to see him stay on because we want to see him score goals. And there were some interesting stats doing the round the other day about how many, say, of Romelu Lukaku's goals come after the 80th minute.
Yeah.
Strikers can really thrive against a tiring defence, especially ones who've got, you know, that power and that athleticism. And I think we all want to see Lacazette given that opportunity. I just think Arsene Wenger is not necessarily protecting him, but just managing him and managing his adaptation. Mm. I genuinely think that's all it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there were some quotes from him today from Lacazette where he's talking about how he's been surprised by the refereeing in English football. Mm. He says he's still adapting a little bit, but he's surprised at what he calls dangerous refereeing. But he's quite interesting. He says, I've watched a few matches to understand English football, and he says, I watch quite a lot of my matches with Arsenal, and when I look back and see what I didn't do right, I try and learn from it, which hopefully facilitates my progression. So I think there is still an element of adaptation of him getting used to the game. I think there's the other element is he's got a 100-goal striker on the bench who he wants to keep fresh and give minutes to and make him feel like he's involved, and Giroud for Lacazette is an obvious change. I don't really think there's a physical element to it. I think Lacazette is capable of doing 90 minutes. He did it against Leicester on the opening day. Now, that is the last time and the only time he's done it in the league for us. So I don't think it's really about fitness. I think it is, like you say, a way of protecting him, of easing him into life at Arsenal. He's going to be, hopefully, our striker for the next 3 or 4 years, somebody who's going to score a lot of goals for us. So, you know, it's still early days. And I do also wonder maybe if it is, in some ways, Arsene Wenger being a little bit clever with him by taking him off by... I mean, he won't want to be taken off, right? No player wants to come off. No player wants to be substituted, even if they might understand the reasons why. So maybe it is, in a way, to sort of make him, not to make him prove himself, but you know what I mean? To sort of add an extra level of determination to Lacazette when he's on the pitch to make his mark and to score the goal. So, you know, I don't think there's any, like you, I don't think there's anything sinister. I don't think it's going to make him any less confident. It might make him more keen to score earlier in games. Who knows? I think that probably there's good communication between Wenger and Lacazette in terms of why it's happening. And, you know, I wouldn't worry about it in any way. To be honest,
no, and I think Arsene Wenger withdrawing his strikers with 20 minutes to go is nothing new. I think he's, you know, with the possible exception of Thierry Henry, who played, you know, pretty much every game, as he has changed them at that time in games many, many times in the past, and I don't think there's anything untoward happening there. One thing I did notice about Lacazette yesterday is the amount of times he spins in behind and it goes ignored. So every time an Aaron Ramsey or Granit Xhaka picks the ball up off the defence, he's looking to make a run in behind. And for whatever reason, he's not being sought out. He's not being picked out. It could simply be that that's not the way Arsene wants the team to play, with that kind of direct long ball over the top. It could be that the players are still growing used to each other. I know it's something Thierry Henry talked about on Sky a few weeks ago now, but he was growing quite frustrated with it yesterday. I think he was feeling a bit like, oh, come on, I'm making these runs. No one's looking for me. So I'll be fascinated to see if that's something we do start doing, or if it's something that Lacazette is doing that's a remnant from his Lyon days. I don't know. I'm interested to see how that one works out.
Yeah, we had a question on that, actually, from Duddy, who's at Rick Duddy, who said, why don't our midfielders look for Lacazette's runs early, following instructions or just not looking? I mean, I think it would have been a bit more difficult yesterday because of how deep Brighton were sitting. It wasn't like that there were vast expanses in behind them all the time. But it's something that I have noticed in games, and maybe there's still an element of the team adapting to Lacazette as much as Lacazette adapting to the team as well, that we've been so used to playing with a more static centre forward like Olivier Giroud, who doesn't make those kind of runs. I mean, I can think of maybe one goal maybe actually when Olivier Giroud broke from deep and went in behind a defence. Maybe there's been one or more, but I think there was a goal against, could have been Everton or somebody at the Emirates anyway, where Mesut Ozil played him through with a beautiful flick and, you know, he went through on goal. That's not the way that he plays. He's a close-range finisher. So, yeah, it could be just a case that the team have got to get used to playing with him as much as he's got to get used to playing with the team. So,
but isn't that interesting, though, that Lacazette is a striker who, when he arrived, you would have thought, well, he's quick. He's someone who does go through on goal, one-on-one. But I can't really remember him having too many opportunities like that so far this season. He's played kind of as a penalty box player, you know, a poacher, really. And, I think that is part of his game that we've not quite tapped into yet. And I guess that's exciting because once we do, that'll be another weapon in his arsenal. But I think it is a period of adaptation for everyone. And I think you're right, playing with Giroud, you wouldn't even look for that pass. And maybe the team just aren't aware of it because his movement is excellent. And when you see it in the flesh, he is constantly on the shoulder of the defender looking to get in behind. So having Mesut Ozil back might help as well in that regard.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, speaking of Mesut Ozil, we've got a question here from, bum, 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 here we go. I've lost it. No, I haven't. I found it again. It was almost a musical there. Like, who was doing the musical? Kevin Campbell. Yeah. Here's a question. I have found it. Keith Kennedy, who's at Keith Design, says, goodly morning, gents. Is it Arsene's intention, do you think, to replace Project Ozil with Project Iwobi?
Wow. I don't know, to be honest. I don't think that he necessarily is in a situation like with Ozil where he's thinking, I'm going to build my team around Iwobi. I think that there are traits that they share, but I think Iwobi has a lot to prove before he's yet in that position. I mean, one thing that a couple of people... Have I got the question here now? I do have a question.
Sing it.
Okay, Funky Fred. Funky Fred on Twitter said, Ozil seems to have said nothing about extending or leaving. Do you expect him to be wilt-ordered? I mean, I suppose on that theme, do you think there's any chance that with Ozil having missed the Chelsea game and with Iwobi having shone again without Ozil this weekend, do you think there's any chance we begin to move away from a reliance on Mesut Ozil in the next few months?
I mean, you'd have to say it's probably something that's going to be on Arsene Wenger's mind. Like, I think there's a difference between wilt-ord and wilt-ording Mesut Ozil, just in terms of the quality and in terms of the potential that they have to have an impact on the team. And, you know, I think wilt-ord is one of those players who gets... he gets a bit of a bad rap. You know, he was a decent player, but when he's in the team alongside Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, Freddie Ljungberg, Robert Pires, you know, he maybe looks a little pale in comparison to those players, but he still scored a decent amount of goals. But in terms of the situation, obviously during his final year when he wouldn't sign a new deal with the club, Arsene Wenger decided, well, look, we've got to move on. We've got to think of new ways, and you're not the future. And it wouldn't surprise me if over the course of the season that did happen a bit with Mesut Ozil. I can't see it happening as much with Alexis Sanchez.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it makes a little bit of sense to me when it's Ozil. It doesn't make any sense to me when it's Alexis. But I do think, generally speaking, he is going to play his strongest team as often as he can. But where I think it might come into play, James, is where we go to big games like Chelsea away, Man United away, Tottenham away, Man City away. Those games we've spoken about before that don't necessarily suit Ozil. But because of his stature, because of his seniority, because perhaps of our desire to keep him and to keep him involved, we couldn't turn around to him and say, look, today's not a day for you. You're not the right player for a game like this. You don't necessarily provide the kind of defensive security that we need. And maybe there was a fear of upsetting him or a fear of... tainting his view of his future at the club. If he's not going to sign, if he's not going to stay, we don't have that to worry about anymore. So maybe he might be more inclined to make those kind of decisions, if that makes sense.
And why is Alexis different in your mind? Is it simply because we have players who can kind of do an imitation of what Ozil does? Say an Iwobi or even a Jack Wilshere maybe. But we don't have anyone who can do what Alexis does.
Correct. And I think what, you know, and I'm not one of those people who buys into the whole Ozil is lazy and he doesn't, you know, I just don't think he's very good defensively. And I think maybe you sacrifice a bit of that or a bit of Ozil's creativity for someone like Iwobi or like Welbeck, who's gonna give you the hard yards in a game away from home where they're a bit more important perhaps than the ability to pick out a pass when you still have someone like Alexis Sanchez in the team who can provide that spark of creativity. So I just think, you know, the character of the players or the way that they play makes Ozil just a little bit more expendable for certain games than Alexis Sanchez. Because you see, it's not to say Sanchez is flawless. Of course, we see him give the ball away. We see him, there were a couple of moments yesterday where he made passes where he was expecting somebody to be and they end up looking like bad passes. And he's obviously trying to be a bit creative. But when they do come off, they create danger. And that, I think, is going to be something that the manager will want to keep in his side. Whereas I think he can manage Ozil a little bit differently now. If he's aware that he's not going to stay, I think he will manage him differently.
I think he has to, because we've seen the effect that a lack of kind of stability can have on this team. We saw it with Arsene's situation last season, and if Arsene is to be believed, we saw it in the Liverpool game, you know, when there were so many players whose futures were potentially in doubt. And I think that if Arsene really is in this for the 2 years or beyond, he will really want to manage the dynamic of the team, and he won't want to create a situation where there is too obvious a reliance on two players who are going to leave at the end of the season. And I think he will, over the course of this season, attempt to kind of manage that and protect his team from the departure of those two players to an extent. I don't think that means dropping them. I just think it means reducing their status a little bit and lifting the status of certain other members of the squad.
Yeah, certainly if he thinks that those players who he can replace them with are in it for the long haul, right? Like someone like Iwobi, who is still learning and still developing as a player, but obviously is a player of real potential. You know, I think if you were to ask him to choose between Ozil and Walcott, for example, then I think Ozil would be getting the nod more often than not. But because he's got players like Welbeck, like Iwobi, who he feels are in some way the future of the club, I think that will have an impact.
Yeah, certainly. Can you offer some advice? We've got a question which requires some advice here.
I will do my best. I can't promise, but I'll do my best.
Okay. So it comes from Rich Partington on Facebook. I was at the Emirates yesterday and there were a couple of really annoying fans behind me who wouldn't stop moaning loudly regardless of what was happening on the pitch, to the extent that it was beginning to affect my own enjoyment of the game. What would be your recommended way of dealing with this? Should I try and ignore it? Should I give them a subtlish look of mild pity or actually say something?
Right. That is annoying, of course.
It is a tricky one, isn't it?
It is a tricky one. I guess the first thing that occurs to me is, one, how big is Rich and how big are the two guys behind him? Because for a star, he's outnumbered. He's outnumbered. Unless Rich has got a crew that we don't know about. Maybe he's there with his boys, you know. But we're assuming it's just one guy against two guys. So I would say the size of these guys would be a factor. And also, you know, we all have a bit of common sense. We can probably decipher a willingness of the people involved. How willing are they to resort to violence? You can sort of take a reading there, use your common sense. If you feel like it's not going to be a case that they're going to just turn around and box you in the face, then I don't see anything really wrong with just turning around saying, come on, lads, just, you know, whatever. I mean, everyone's entitled to act the way they want during a game, right? You can moan, you can cheer and everything else. But when it's so relentless, when everything is a negative, it does get a bit wearing. It really can. So, yeah, I would see how safe it is to say something. Otherwise, I would go with the look of, pity or slight scorn. Just sort of turn around and tut slightly. I don't know.
I think you've got to encourage these people to see the beauty in life. You know, just maybe say, hey, look at the sky. Look at the formation of those clouds. Look at the sun, people behind them. Look at that grass. Isn't the world lovelier than you ever thought? You know, find the beauty in things, guys. Look at the way Alex Iwobi runs along with his little socks rolled down. It's not all bad. There's things to enjoy. Nacho Monreal scored a goal, you know?
Exactly.
Embrace it.
Exactly, exactly. Maybe some people just get stuck in a negative rut, you know? Maybe they just need a hug. That's what he should do. Should just turn around.
Hug them.
Just give them a hug. Go, it's all right, guys. It's all right, it's only football. Here's a hug. Then you probably get your face boxed in, actually.
Yeah, be careful. Be very careful.
Okay, and just so we're clear, any advice that Rich takes and carries out, we bear no responsibility for whatsoever. So, yeah, okay.
Absolutely not.
All right, the next question is actually also slightly based around fans, and there are two of them. So one comes from Shaving Arshavin, who's at Christo214970023, who says, should we make selfie takers do a Game of Thrones style walk of shame? Surely that'll sort out the fuckers. And Funkmasters, Funkmaster Fat, who's at Joshua Jason, says, taking selfies before the game, yay or nay?
Well, can I ask, was there something that caused this to be a particular source of debate?
Yes. There was a tweet going around last night where somebody had, rather unironically, of course, taken a photo inside the stadium of two other people taking a photo of themselves. There were a couple of, I think, Asian fans. They could have been, I mean, they could be local, but they looked like they had come from, I don't know, from the Far East somewhere, and were maybe at their first game. They had a selfie stick. It was well before the game. The ground was relatively empty. And somebody said, well, you know, this is like the end. You know, football is dying or some shit like that, right? So I think that's where that's come from. It's sort of tweeted around and people have had their own opinions on it. But I guess this is why the questions are out there.
Okay. I think that there's no harm in that at all. Is there someone taking a selfie well before the game in the ground? You know, I don't know who that's hurting. I don't know who that's affecting. I think when it's a bit different is obviously people, you know, filming themselves during the game or trying to get pictures of themselves during the game, obstructing other people's views, not actually watching the game because they're on their phone. I can understand that that is irritating because it impedes and affects the atmosphere in the ground. And I think, you know, naturally tourists don't want to do stuff like that, but that is a bit annoying. But I think around the game, I haven't got any issue with it at all, I'm say. What about you?
Yeah, who the hell, what difference does it make if someone takes a picture of themselves inside the ground? You could just ignore it, right? The only reason it's an issue is because you're making it one, because you're choosing to be offended by two people doing something that has absolutely no bearing on you whatsoever. You know, I think we have to remember, like, if you're an Arsenal season ticket holder who lives on Holloway Road and you go every week, you know, it's a very different experience for somebody who comes from abroad to see their first Arsenal game. And, you know, people use the word tourists, and it's somewhat disparaging, I think. I think we have to just remember that these are fans. They come from a different part of the world. To them, going to the Emirates for a game is like an amazing experience. This is like, it's like going to a church. It's like you or I it's like you or I going to, you know, New York or going to bloody Sydney or something. And what do? You take a picture of yourself at the Sydney Harbour Bridge, or you take a picture of yourself in Times Square or at the Empire State Building. Because that's what people do, right? Because it's such a unique experience, because they might only ever get to go to the Emirates once in their life. Just one time. They could have saved for years to make a trip to the other side of the world to go and see the football team that they support, and they want to take a picture of themselves inside the stadium. You know, so fucking what? I don't have any problem with that. And where I think you're absolutely right is people who are filming themselves throughout the game, they're worse. They're far worse than two people taking a picture before the game has even started, so they can remember you know, a great experience that they've had. They've gone, they've seen their football team won, and they're looking to look at the picture and say, oh, I remember that time we went to London and we were in the Emirates and it was amazing, and what a stadium. You know, we had a brilliant experience watching our football team. But if you were sitting there every week recording yourself, get to fuck. They're the ones you want to point some fingers at, you know?
Yeah, that's it. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, Arsenal is such a huge club, such a huge following from all across the world. And those of us who live in England or indeed London and get to go to games more regularly are in a privileged position to be able to do that. And if people come and they want to make a real day of it and make some memories and capture those memories on camera, I think you've got to respect that. And that's their right, really. I would be the same in a lot of other situations. So... And, you know, even selfie stick, guys, I don't even hate a selfie stick that much. Is it actually, I don't own one, but I could never actually bring myself to buy one, but I can see that it's actually quite a useful device.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I don't have a selfie stick either, but you know what you can do with selfie sticks? You can just kind of ignore them. Some people, look.
That's the best thing about them.
Yeah, look, life has changed, right? The world has changed. And these are new things, the ideas of, you know, selfies. You know, 15 years ago, not everybody had a high-resolution camera in their pocket that they could, you know, take pictures of themselves with. But people have always taken selfies. People have always taken pictures of themselves in, holiday situations or things like that. You know, before there were cameras, people were fucking painting pictures of themselves, for fuck's sake. So it's not that, you know, you can just ignore two people who are taking a picture. If they're standing up in the middle of a game and they're in your way, by all means say something, by all means get outraged by it. But, you know, when you could just mind your own business. And there's something weird, isn't there, as well, about saying, you know, putting it on Twitter and trying to shame people, trying to whip up a bit of a frenzy against them when they're just minding their own business. They're not doing you any harm. I think it's fucking bullshit, to be honest.
If anything, the selfie has spared you, you know, if you're annoyed, the fact of people saying, excuse me, would you mind taking a picture for us? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be grateful for the selfie stick.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, that's perhaps cut down on human interaction. Maybe there's that. Maybe we're missing that part of things.
Thank God. Thank God for that.
Yeah, we don't want to be fucking talking to people. But yeah, look, you know, there are far worse offenders every week in that stadium than the people who were put up on Twitter yesterday. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
All right. I think we're going to leave it there for this week because sound quality issues are ongoing and they're now becoming unbearable for me to try and deal with as well. So we'll leave it there. I don't know if we'll have a podcast on Friday because it's an interlull, but you never know. You never know. We might pull something out of the bag, and we'll be here next week as usual with an Arsecast Extra talking about whatever nothing is going on during the interlull, but hopefully we've got a bit going on. James, thank you as ever.
My pleasure.
Hope the dogs continue to scare the life out of
people. They seem to have settled down now, yes. Good news.
Good news indeed. And it's always good to have a bit of dog action in our podcast, so I thank you for that. And thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.